find someone you trust and you can talk to about anything. If therapy works for you, that's fine. If it doesn't, just find somebody to talk to that you trust, and they'll help you through everything.
Welcome to the Telling It Our Way podcast. I'm Allie.
And I'm Becca.
In this podcast, we bring you stories by disabled people about disabled people. Stories from the daily lives of self-advocates with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
These are real people with complicated lives. They don't want your pity, and they do not exist to inspire you.
This is not inspiration porn.
Hey there, Allie.
Hey, Becca.
Today's show, we are finally diving into a topic that we have skirted around, talked about, and addressed in several other episodes before. But, specifically when we did our episodes on moving out and self-advocacy, we talked about this a little bit, but we've never dedicated an episode.
I know. I'm excited because both of our stories today address the issue of staff. And many of our listeners may relate to this if they have experienced hiring their own staff as people with disabilities, but others may find this really new. I know I probably grew up with the image that disabled people just kind of had to deal with whomever was willing to provide care. And I never really thought about disabled people as agents or having autonomy to actually choose who they invite into their lives like this.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting that you say that. There is this picture that disabled people always have staff, which itself is a problem that we've talked about on the show. But people don't really think about, who are those people? Where do they come from? How do people get staff into their lives? How do they find good staff and keep them? And I think this idea of hiring and firing your own staff is a really important one. And sometimes disabled people don't feel empowered or able to do that. And for a lot of reasons, which we're going to dig into, they sometimes do feel or experience that they just kind of have to accept whatever they can get. And I hear these stories all the time from my friends who are navigating hiring paid staff for their own needs. And there's also like these weird assumptions that exist about who's in charge when staff get involved, these problems with power and respect and hierarchies, right? And hopefully our storytellers can change some of these perspectives a little bit.
Yeah, I think Mia Mingus, a disabled writer and activist, talks about the experience of having people provide care as access intimacy, which is a lovely way to think about how important these roles as caregivers can really be.
Yeah, exactly. And I have the pleasure of teaching college students, which I know you did as well. And often the students that we teach in disability studies are working part-time or full-time as direct support providers or direct caregivers. And so I often get to hear kind of bits and pieces of their professional caregiving experience. And I myself, I worked as a direct support professional in the past, both in a DAIC program and in people's homes. But today we're going to hear from the perspectives of people with disabilities themselves. And so first, we're going to hear from Ray, who tells us about how he learned to speak up for himself with his staff. Ray, you told me that you want to talk about moving out at 24 and how that made you into a self-advocate. So could you just start by just telling me in as much detail as possible what it was like when you moved out?
What it was like when I moved out, I was kind of nervous at first, you know, because, you know, you kind of fear the unknown. But as I got, you know, used to it and kind of stepped away from, you know, the mom and the dad thing, kind of showed me that I can be successful with having a disability. Yes, I have some disadvantages, but I have a great support system. I still have my mom and my family, along with good staff, so I was able to kind of step up away from the comfort zone and, you know, see different things. And with me having a disability, I turned into an advocate by, you know, letting everybody know it's okay to be different. You know, you might need extra help, you might need to, you know, ask questions 1,000 times, but eventually the right person hears you, and that's what matters. In my opinion, you just, you know, keep speaking up for what you want, and that's what I learned to do.
Can you give an example of one of those times when you had to get out of your comfort zone and really challenge yourself when in that process?
Well, one of them is I was talking to my mom about 4 or 5 years ago now about paying a bill. You know, I wanted to pay the bills by myself. And my mom is, you know, I'm a mama's boy, and she always wanted, you know, help. But it came to, you know, I would always have to call her and give her the account information over the phone. And I told her, what happens if there's, you know, a late fee and I can't get you? And we kind of talked about letting me do it, you know, that way she doesn't have to worry about the bill being paid. And when I get it, I could just, you know, set it up for automatic withdrawal. And I'm still learning how to advocate with my mom, because that's my mom, you know, and she's, you know, always worried about me. But I think she's letting not the leash go, but you know what I mean, like letting go of some of that rope a little bit, seeing that I'm can do it, and seeing that I'm successful, and I still got her in my back pocket.
One thing you mentioned is that one thing that's been really important is finding the right staff and the right support system. And so I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about your experience with staff and if there's been times when you've had to stand up for yourself.
You know, finding a good support system is very important because, in my opinion, I want the people that want what's best for me. Not only themselves, but what's best for me. And you know, if I say I don't like an individual for whatever the reason, you know, sometimes we just don't get along, and you know, I go to the owners and, you know, like, hey, I don't like this particular individual, and you know, we work towards getting along. Most of the time, you know, it's they do it, but sometimes they don't. So it's just about figuring out what's best, how to pick your battles, because every battle is not worth fighting, because some things you can't control, but the things that I can, I try to control them. So
Ray, when we spoke the other day, you told me a story about how you had had your independent time taken away, and they had said that you had to have staff with you 24/7. And so I wonder if you could just tell that story.
My staff and I was at an event, this project stir, where people kind of learn how to advocate for themselves, and it's a whole big ceremony. So me and my staff went down there, and I was feeling a little sick, you know, prior to the event, but I said I'm gonna go because I committed to it. So I decided to go, and then as the day went on, because it was like a three day ordeal, so I went down and, you know, my asthma started acting up, and I got sick and I had to end up going to the emergency room. And so after that scenario was done, I found out that it took my alone time away. And with me having 24-hour care, you know, 3 or 4 hours here or there is very important to me. Just to be able to be alone in your own house, you know, sometimes. So I was fighting. I went to the county board, and I couldn't get anywhere. So I decided to go to the doctor and get a doctor's note wrote up, and he said that I was able to have my alone time, and we were able to put it back in the plan. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I did about that.
That's great. I think that's a really great story, Ray. And I think this, just emphasizing the idea that having time to be alone in your own home is an important thing to be able to fight for.
Yes, it is.
And so what motivates you to speak up?
When I speak up, I don't speak up just for me in every scenario. I speak up for the people that can't or might not know how or are afraid to, because, I mean, it's scary, you know, especially dealing with agencies. You know, you might be afraid that you might get a 30-day notice or, you know, anything. It's very scary. So I like to just advocate for others, because I know there's some people in this world that don't know how to advocate or are afraid to advocate. So I just like to use my voice, because every voice matters. You wouldn't have a voice if you wouldn't have a voice if it didn't matter. So at the end of the day, I try to use my voice because it matters. So that's what motivates me.
And so what advice might you give to some of those people with disabilities who you're talking about who might not know how to do this or might be afraid to speak up for themselves?
That all you need is the right person to hear it. And I'm going to hear hearing you, but listening to you. Because there's a difference between hearing. Everybody can hear, but not everybody listens. You know what I mean? So it's important because all you need is that one person to hear you. And that's what matters. So your opinion matters. Everybody has an opinion, but it matters. You know, every situation matters. So no problem is too small, you know. So, but that's what matters. Everything that you do is for a reason. So
I know the other thing that you're passionate about is bringing together and celebrating the disability community. So can you just talk about that a little bit?
Celebrating the disability community is one of my biggest accomplishments because, like, you have all of these different events each month, and I feel like the disability community does. I mean, we have March Disability Awareness Month, but July is Disability Pride Month. So to bring people together with all different kinds of abilities, I don't even like the word disability. I like the word ability just because, you know, everybody has different abilities. So it's just about celebrating us and knowing that it's okay to be quote-unquote different. You know, it's no problem. So bringing people together is very important. July 12th, we had a disability pride picnic at the park, and everybody, you know, had food, music, water balloons, and just bringing different home health agencies together. It was an awesome time. And, you know, we look forward to hopefully doing it again next year, making it bigger and better. So that's what it's about.
And Ray, why did you want to come share your story on the podcast?
I think the podcast is a great idea, and it gives us a good platform to share our stories. I think a lot of times, dealing with staff, you have staff share their stories, but this is a good way to share our stories and how we deal with different obstacles and how we overcome struggles. And so I think, you know, everybody deserves a platform. So I think this is a great avenue to do so.
It's a great advertisement for us. Is there anything else that you want to add?
Keep pushing on. Keep it on. That's what it is. So that's pretty much it. You know, just stay positive. No negativity. Everybody has negativity, but turn that negative energy into positive energy.
What I love about Ray's story is the emphasis on putting together the right team. How if one thing isn't working, it has to do with the relations between people and not simply the quote-unquote behaviors of the disabled person. And so often the disabled person's perspective on their own staffing is missing. I did an initial academic search on intellectual disability and caregiving and found that this ingrained bias, most initial articles the search engine was feeding me were about the depression and the care burden of caregivers, but nothing was from the perspective of the client, the disabled person. So what about their depression or anxiety or quality of life if they can't have the right team in place?
Well, there was a study that was done in 2024 by Elizabeth Smith and colleagues where they interviewed 87 people with intellectual and developmental disabilities and 120 of the care staff. And they wanted to find out exactly what you're saying. You know, what are those kind of positive and negative impacts on daily life? And it's not really a surprise to learn that the study found that self-determination and autonomy, so people being able to make choices for themselves, you know, everything from where do I want to work to what shirt am I going to wear in the morning, that these people have a more positive perspective on their lives. And we don't think about this when you have someone who's assisting you with caregiving, if that involves physical care, that having the choice to, for example, pick out your own clothes is important, right? And so, even with that in mind, what they found in this study is that 1/3 of the people that they talked to reported loneliness or mental health issues like depression. And so the point is that these relationships are so important. You know, we've referenced in the past the 2006 study from Rachel Forrester-Jones and colleagues, where they said that people with intellectual and developmental disabilities have much smaller social networks than their non-disabled peers, only 22 people on average, as compared to over 100 in non-disabled groups. And they tend to mostly be made up of staff, family, and other service recipients, so people who are, you know, in your day program, for example. And in fact, in 2020, 2021, in the National Core Indicators, they reported that 23% of their respondents with intellectual and developmental disabilities said they didn't have any friends who weren't staff or family members.
Yeah. Our next storyteller brings a different perspective, and I love this humbling approach. Matt, he shares his experience of being perhaps not the person you would want to work for. Let's listen.
Five to seven years ago when I got to the company I'm at now, I was a pain in the ass, and people would complain about working with me because I would want it to be a certain way, and you just don't get that when you're in a company. You have to be able to roll with the punches that are sent your way and kind of adapt as you go on. Yeah, I didn't really care about anybody, what they said and what they did. I wanted it my way, and as we all know, it doesn't happen that way. You have to take the time to learn and adapt and figure out the staff and how they work best. And you can't always yell at them or treat them bad, or they're not going to want to work with you. You just got to wake up and pay attention to what's going on around you and how you want to be in life. If you continue going on the way you're going, like say if you have a bad mood or a bad attitude all the time, you won't get to see the good in life unless you realize that not everybody has that good support system that I have. I have my mom, my dad, my staff, just, you know, all that I need. Different people on my team that can help me throughout what I need, and I know how to use it properly. You have to, there's my company, and there's all kinds of companies out there. My company is not the only one, but the Columbus Developmental Center is like the last stop, it's like the total last stop where they send all the people that can't get along with anyone. And I decided I didn't want to be like that, so I'm working really hard on changing, and people are helping me through that, and even my mom's helping me through that. And you have to realize that when you have a mother that fights for me as hard as my mom did, you have to, like, give her some grace and give her a chance to get a little bit of her life back and say it's okay for you to take a break and help my sister and my grandma or whatever, you know, to do whatever she needs to do, because she takes more care of more than just me. Yeah, my team that I have, there's social workers, there's staff, and all the people at Open Door are like my best friends. Some of my friends that I have, some of the friends that I made have helped me, you know. They always help me through things, and I just continue to do. I wake up every day happier than I have been in a while. I'm always busy, so I have a bunch of things to do on a daily basis, and I stay busier now than I ever was when I was working. It's good for me to stay busy. I help people with whatever they need, whether it's somebody to talk to, how to go about doing something in the company, because I pretty much experienced it all, and I know how the steps to take to do whatever they need to do. So I guide them that way, And if somebody just needs to talk, I do that for them. I talk to Wallace on a daily basis. He's one of my best friends, and he's an artist. And we're going on vacation in about a couple weeks, so I talk to him on a daily basis just to let him know somebody cares. You know, I talk to Manny every day, and he gives me advice on everything that I need to do, have to do, want to do. And Manny's one of my staff. He's the lead staff of my house. He's been with me for almost 8 years now, so he's been with me through it all. And I pretty much wouldn't be where I'm at today without my team, my mom, and my family, and all the staff that I have, and the people from Open Door. I hope that somebody out there listens to this story, and if I can help change it with just one person, that would be great. And I hope that they pass on what they heard from me to the next person. That's just all I can hope. If you need someone to talk to, if you want to have therapy, it's always out there, but there's always someone to talk to. Find someone you trust and you can talk to about anything. And if therapy works for you, that's fine. If it doesn't, just find somebody to talk to and that you trust, and they'll help you through everything. That's pretty much all I can say about that.
Wow, there's so much I love about Matt's story. And it just seems like Matt was really able to see himself more clearly when he met Manny, who, in his own words, just wasn't willing to put up with Matt's bullshit.
Which really just means treating Matt as a human and a peer, right? I think sometimes we don't understand people with intellectual and developmental disabilities as our peers if we are neuronormative. And then we let poor behavior slide because we just think like, oh, they can't help it.
Yeah. And Manny was willing to hold Matt up to this kind of peer standard, to hold him accountable. And I think that really helped Matt to understand himself as part of a larger community. And it seems to have made a huge difference in his life. One thing I have to bring up, though, is that there are huge barriers to ending up with experiences like Matt's. And one of the biggest ones is that there just aren't enough direct support providers. And so I'm gonna give you some data. And this data is coming from a few different places: the President's Committee for People with Intellectual Disability, the Office of Disability Employment Policy, and ANCOR, that's spelled A-N-C-O-R, which is a policy organization for community-based service providers. But what they all agree on is that we just do not have enough service providers. And there are some serious barriers that are keeping or pushing people out of this field. So one study says that we need about 700,000 new direct support providers or staff every year to serve everyone who needs them. But the lack of benefits, the low pay, the little chance for promotion, the lack of training and support, all that means that nearly 45% of these direct support providers leave the field within the first year. And that's just making the problem worse.
Yeah. And ANCOR reported in 2021 that 77% of providers they surveyed weren't accepting new clients, and nearly 60% discontinued services, and 40% saw more reportable incidents like injuries and abuse. And, you know, I think I was just working on a study here in Maine about the need for direct service providers for kids with medically complicated conditions, and how most of these kiddos, they get approved for something like 15 or 18 hours of care a week, which isn't even nearly enough to start the approval. But most of them don't end up with any because there just isn't anyone available in their rural communities that can do the work.
Yeah. And so what that means is that practically people can't get the care they want or need in the communities. I've both read studies and heard anecdotally from my own friends and community many stories about people having to wait long periods of time, like days or even weeks, for staff assistance with things like bathing or brushing their teeth or showering or other essential things like going to the grocery store or work or appointments, let alone the things that they want to do in the community. And some people have had to leave their homes and go into nursing homes or other institutional settings just to ensure they get the support that they need.
And some states, like in Ohio, have had recent laws passed to try to, you know, increase incentives to go into this field. And these incentives include things like mandatory higher minimum wages for direct support providers. But there's still a huge gap. And with so many people leaving the field so quickly, it means that there's not often time to build long-term supportive relationships like the ones Matt describes.
Yeah. So if you want to learn more about the DSP crisis, that DSP, again, stands for Direct Support Provider, here in Ohio, you can visit a site called dspohio.org. Or for more national information, you can visit ANCOR.org. That's A-N-C-O-R.
Before we end, I want to thank our contributors, Ray and Matt, our associate producer, Connor Smenner, and our Telling It Our Way advisory board members, Sarita Fox, Quinn Thomas, and Gavin Daly.
And special thanks to WGTE and always our amazing producer, Chris Pfeiffer.
Access our transcripts for this show and any other show notes. Visit WGTE.org/Our Way. I'm Allie Day.
And I'm Becca Monteleone. And you've been listening to Telling It Our Way.
WGTE. Voices around us.